Between 1870 and 2010, humanity experienced the most dramatic transformation in its entire existence. For thousands of years, life had barely changed. A person from ancient Rome would recognize medieval Europe without much surprise. Then suddenly, within just 140 years, everything exploded. Wealth multiplied 21 times over. Life expectancy doubled. Extreme poverty plummeted from 70% to under 9%. Yet here's the puzzle. Despite achieving material abundance beyond our ancestors' wildest dreams, we still haven't reached utopia. Depression, anxiety, and inequality plague even the wealthiest societies. What went wrong? Understanding this paradox isn't just academic curiosity. It's essential for anyone hoping to shape a better future. For millennia, humanity was stuck in what economists call the Malthusian trap. Any technological improvement, a better plow, a new crop, simply allowed more people to survive at the same miserable standard of living. Between the years 1 and 1500, technology improved at just 0.04% annually, barely perceptible across generations. Population growth consumed nearly all gains. People spent half their resources securing bare minimum calories, living in constant fear of famine. Disease was rampant, literacy rare, and life expectancy hovered around 30 years. Around 1870, three forces converged to shatter millennia of stagnation. Steamships and telegraphs created instant global connection. Industrial research laboratories systematized innovation. Modern corporations marshaled unprecedented capital. Together, these unlocked 2.1% annual growth, doubling prosperity every 33 years. A London worker's daily wages in 1870 bought 5,000 bread calories. Today, they buy 2.4 million, nearly 500 times more. This transformation extended beyond food. Women no longer spent 20 years pregnant or breastfeeding as infant survival soared. Antibiotics, vaccines, plumbing, and electricity revolutionized existence. Yet prosperity remains criminally uneven. And even in wealthy nations, abundance hasn't delivered happiness. We're trapped on a hedonic treadmill where material concerns feel as pressing as ever. By 1914, agricultural innovations and vast new farming regions finally chained Malthus's devil. Communication transformed most dramatically. The seven-month journey from Britain to India became minutes via submarine telegraph. Yet only six countries had boarded the escalator of modern growth by 1870: Britain, France, Germany, the United States, Canada, and Belgium. Colonial policies actively discouraged local manufacturing, forcing colonies to export raw materials. The industrialized North built sophisticated banking and research institutions, while the South remained trapped exporting commodities, a self-reinforcing cycle where initial advantages compounded relentlessly. The most consequential development after 1870 was the unprecedented quadrupling of technological progress to 2% annually. Advanced North Atlantic economies had invented invention through industrial research labs, patent systems, and modern corporations. Before 1870, inventions came from individual craftsmen. After 1870, entirely new commodities emerged rapidly. Telephones, automobiles, electric power, photography, recorded sound. Nikola Tesla's story illustrates this era's brilliance and tragedy. Despite notable eccentricities, requiring actions divisible by three, compulsively calculating volumes, Tesla's genius was undeniable. He defeated Edison in the War of the Currents, championing alternating current that enabled efficient long-distance power transmission. Yet when financiers seized control during the 1907 panic, they replaced visionaries like Tesla with profit-focused executives. Tesla, having surrendered his patent royalties to save Westinghouse's company, ultimately impoverished himself while his ideas transformed the world. By 1914, America had emerged as the global technological leader. Even committed communists like Leon Trotsky marveled at America's technological wonders during his 1917 New York stay. electric lights, telephones, automatic elevators, mechanized subways, everyday conveniences still rare in Europe.
Between 1776 and 1965, political economic systems transformed dramatically. Democracy became the principle causing the least offense to the greatest number, though expanding suffrage proved painfully slow. Finland led Europe in 1906 with universal suffrage. American women won the vote in 1920 with the 19th Amendment. Racial enfranchisement took longer, marked by atrocities like the 1873 Colfax Massacre, where approximately 100 black Americans were murdered. True black enfranchisement didn't arrive until the 1965 Voting Rights Act. This democratic struggle intersected with economic history through two Vienna-born thinkers, Friedrich Hayek and Karl Polanyi. Hayek argued that questioning whether market distribution was fair constituted fatal error. Markets reward those in the right place at the right time, not the deserving. Polanyi countered that people possess rights beyond property, rights to stable communities, and income commensurate with preparation. Society inevitably intervenes through a double movement. As markets try disembedding from social relations, society reasserts itself through government or mass action. Chicago exemplified these tensions, exploding from 4,000 people in 1840 to 2 million by 1900. The 1886 Haymarket Affair crystallized this conflict. During strikes for 8-hour workdays, police killed workers, a bomb killed officers, and 8 innocent labor organizers were hanged, a stark reminder that economic progress came with brutal social conflict.
Despite unprecedented wealth and technology, humanity catastrophically failed to reach utopia. Norman Angell's 1909 book, The Great Illusion, correctly argued war had become economically irrational, but fatally underestimated humanity's capacity for irrational nationalism. The summer of 1914 brought devastating miscalculations. After Gavrilo Princip assassinated Archduke Franz Ferdinand, Austria-Hungary moved to punish Serbia. Russia mobilized to protect Slavic peoples, while Germany backed Austria-Hungary. Each power calculated based on previous short wars, misunderstanding how industrialization had transformed warfare's destructive potential. The toll was staggering. 10 million soldiers dead, 10 million permanently maimed, another 10 million seriously injured. Four empires collapsed: German, Austro-Hungarian, Ottoman, and Russian. The German Social Democratic Party's capitulation powerfully demonstrates nationalism's ability to override principle. Despite being Europe's largest socialist party, founded on international solidarity and pacifism, only 13 of 110 deputies opposed war funding. The Great Depression began when the Federal Reserve's attempts to control speculation backfired in 1929. When money becomes scarce and people hoard cash, a devastating cycle emerges. Workers sit idle because firms won't hire. Firms won't hire because they see no market. And there's no market because idle workers have no income. With the old order discredited, two alternatives emerged: Stalin's brutal Soviet totalitarianism and Hitler's fascism advocating territorial expansion eastward. When Hitler invaded Poland on September 1, 1939, Britain and France declared war, but remained passive as Poland fell within a month. France collapsed in 6 weeks, starting May 10, 1940, through blitzkrieg tactics, combining mechanized warfare with air support. Nazi strategic errors proved catastrophic. Dispersed forces at Stalingrad created vulnerabilities the Soviets exploited, as Germany couldn't sustain monthly losses of 50,000 soldiers. By 1944, Allied war production overwhelmed the Axis with a 6-to-1 advantage. The U.S. alone manufactured 300,000 aircraft and 87,000 tanks. The war ended with Germany's defeat and Japan's atomic bombing, technology the Nazis couldn't develop after dismissing Jewish science and exiling their best physicists.
The Cold War paradoxically accelerated progress through technological competition and research funding. From 1938 to 1973, despite wartime devastation, G7 countries grew at 3% annually, becoming three times wealthier. This golden age expanded the middle class, suburbs, and innovations, from computers to jet travel. For markets to succeed, three prerequisites emerged: rejecting monopoly theories, embracing Keynes's insight that markets need sufficient spending for full employment, and recognizing Polanyi's insight that people demand fundamental rights, stable land use, fair incomes, job security, that markets deliver only if profitable. This synthesis created the post-war mixed economy, balancing free enterprise with social protection. After 1973, confidence persisted despite slowing growth. But by 1979, cultural energy shifted rightward as social democracy appeared to fail. The 30 glorious years had raised unsustainable expectations. People anticipated equally distributed incomes, doubling each generation. Paul Volcker's Federal Reserve raised interest rates dramatically to fight inflation, pushing unemployment to 11% by 1982, the worst downturn since the Great Depression. Despite empirical failure, neoliberalism persisted as conventional wisdom, resembling religious fundamentalism in its ideological doubling down. It restored growth rates for the top. America's top 0.01% went from 100 to 500 times average income, while everyone below the top 10% saw their shares fall. Four developments ended the long 20th century: Germany and Japan challenging America's technological edge in 1990, religious fanaticism resurging in 2001, the 2008 Great Recession revealing forgotten Keynesian lessons, and failure to address global warming. Trump's 2016 election confirmed this end. Economic growth had slowed, globalization reversed, and confidence diminished. Despite achieving technological powers beyond previous imagining, we failed to build utopia. The market economy proved both solution and problem, recognizing property rights, but not rights to community, deserved income, and stability. The question isn't whether we can create abundance, we've proven that, but whether that abundance serves human flourishing.